It's a minute before 12. Good afternoon. Thank you for tuning in. This is Public Radio KMXT Kodiak 100.1 FM, live on the web, kmxt.org. Still not getting to the villages as of yet. We have an engineer who's supposed to be going in tomorrow morning up there at UAF to try and figure out what's going on. So hopefully we'll have the villages back on by tomorrow afternoon. Keep you posted on our Facebook page. It's a lovely day here, 53 degrees out at the airport with a few clouds, lots of sunshine though, 57 here on Signal Hill. Humidity's up about 70%, east wind to 7 miles an hour blowing with 10 miles visibility. It's going to be partly sunny this afternoon with a high near 57, calm winds. Partly cloudy tonight, low around 46. Calm winds become east, or come west, around 5 miles an hour after midnight. Isolated showers tomorrow after 4 p.m. Sunny skies for most of the day with a high near 56 with calm winds. Only a 10% chance of rain moving in tomorrow night. Cloudy tomorrow night with a low around 46. West winds 5 miles an hour. Sunday, mostly sunny with a high near 58. West winds 10 miles an hour. Great weekend ahead of us. Chiniac Bay this afternoon, variable less than 10 with seas of 3 feet. Tonight, variable less than 10, seas of 3 feet. Variable less than 10, seas of 2 feet on Saturday. And southwest winds at 10 with seas of 2 feet on Sunday. Marmot Bay this afternoon, the winds should become variable of 10 knots this afternoon, 2-foot seas. Southwest 10, 2-foot seas tonight. Southwest 10 in the morning, becoming variable less than 10 with 2-foot seas on Saturday. And west winds of 10 with 2-foot seas on Sunday. Lovely, huh? 3 p.m. today, the high tide's about 7.5 feet.
Live from NPR News, I'm Lakshmi Singh. Police in Minneapolis are now formally barred from using chokeholds to restrain a suspect. NPR's David Chaper reports the city council, which is moving to make sweeping reforms in the troubled police department, acted more than a week after George Floyd, a 46-year-old black man, was killed under the strain of a police officer's knee.
The city council action bans police officers from the use of all neck restraints in chokeholds for any reason. It also requires any officer who observes another officer using a chokehold or any other unauthorized use of force to intervene, and they must report it to their commander. The council is also restricting the use of chemical agents, rubber bullets, flashbangs, batons, and other weapons of crowd control during protests and demonstrations, allowing them only when authorized by the chief of police. These are the first Minneapolis police reform steps in the wake of widespread and sometimes violent protests over the police killing of George Floyd by an officer seen on video kneeling on Floyd's neck for almost 9 minutes. David Shaper, NPR News, Minneapolis.
Civil rights activists are keeping up their protests for racial justice across the country. National Guard forces will remain in Washington, D.C., but NPR's Greg Myrie reports the Pentagon has decided to send troops called to the D.C. region in recent days back to their bases.
Army Secretary Ryan McCarthy says all 900 active duty military police who were brought to the outskirts of Washington are going back to their home bases. In addition, 700 members of the 82nd Airborne were ordered back to Fort Bragg, North Carolina yesterday. As protests escalated over the police killing of George Floyd, the troops were brought onto bases in Virginia and Maryland, just outside the Capitol. But they never entered the city. Meanwhile, National Guard forces, which have been operating in Washington, will remain for now. Washington has had protests and some looting this week, but the demonstrations have been peaceful for the past several days. Greg Myrie, NPR News, Washington.
The president's political standing is suffering, according to a new NPR PBS NewsHour Marist poll. Details from NPR's Domenico Montanaro.
41% of Americans approve of the job Trump is doing as president, but 55% now disapprove. That's a near-record high disapproval rating. Beneath those numbers, the intensity of disapproval is notable. Almost half of people in this country, 47%, now say they strongly disapprove of the job the president is doing. And in a head-to-head general election matchup, Trump is losing to presumptive Democratic nominee Joe Biden 50-43%. Domenico Montanaro, NPR News, Washington.
The May jobs report took many economists by surprise. The Labor Department says the economy added 2.5 million jobs last month. The unemployment rate fell to 13.3%. The data suggesting more people went back to work during the widespread reopenings during the coronavirus pandemic. This is NPR.
NPR News es presentada a usted en parte por la Providence Kodiak Island Centro de Asesoramiento. Para una cita o más información, por favor, llama al 907-481-2400.
The Midday Report on KMXT is brought to you in part by Ardinger's Fine Furnishings, where you'll find the Simmons Dual Comfort Mattress, allowing you to customize your sleep experience. Also featuring massage and zero-gravity chairs from the Human Touch Company and sofas and love seats by Stanton. 486-5554.
At last night's marathon regular meeting, the Kodiak Island Borough Assembly unanimously passed next year's budget, but not without lengthy and at times contentious discussion between assembly members. Jared Griffin with KMXT News has this recap of the budget talks.
The nearly $18 million budget for the Kodiak Island Borough, proposed by Assemblymember Rebecca Skinner and amended by the Assembly, maintains the $1 million cut to Kodiak Island Borough School District and the current property tax rate of 10.75 mils. Among the cuts to the general fund were decreases in the operating budget and the elimination of funding for some programs, such as Kodiak College's Jumpstart program, a college tuition relief program for first-time freshmen and high school students. After public testimony and a proposed amendment by Assemblymember James Turner, the Assembly reinstated $50,000 to Kodiak College. The Assembly also reconsidered and voted to fund a small budget item, economic development, typically budgeted at $20,000 and normally used to support the Kodiak Salmon Work Group, a lobbying organization that promotes the Kodiak seafood economy. But the looming question in the meeting was how to pay for debt service after Governor Mike Dunleavy vetoed state reimbursement for school bond debt this spring, and after it became clear that federal CARES Act funding would likely not be able to be used for debt service. The Facilities Fund, sometimes called the Shuyak Fund according to code, can be used for debt service, but some assembly members were wary of tapping into the principal of the $40 million account to bridge this year's $5 million budget gap caused by debt. Ultimately, the Assembly passed a budget but ran out of time to decide how to pay for the budget and to vote on a reconsideration of the $1 million cut to the school district. They will take up these matters at a special meeting this Monday at 6:30. The decision on how to pay for the budget is complicated by the tax cap, which Kodiak voters approved in 2018, and limits how much the borough can increase property taxes based on the previous year's revenues. The tax cap is set to be reconsidered this October, long after the budget and its financing has been approved. Using the facilities fund to bridge the gap also creates a one-time solution for next year's budget, and assembly members warned that without a raise in the mill rate, the borough could be stuck in a cycle of relying on that rainy day fund. Under borough code, the assembly has until June 15th to determine property tax rates for the year. For KMXT News, I'm Jared Griffin.
When the assembly resumes their budget talks this Monday, they will also take public comment on the proposed changes to the property tax rate and to public school funding. You can listen to the meeting at 6:30 Monday night on KMXT and call in with your comments during the public hearing, 486-3231. Norton Sound Health Corporation announced today there are currently no active cases of COVID-19 in the Bering Strait region. The latest two confirmed cases, who were both Norton Sound Health Corporation employees in Nome, have deemed recovered. In the daily situation report released this morning, the health corporation said it has conducted more than 5,200 COVID-19 tests, about 4,000 of which returned negative, 1,200 still pending. Thus far, only three positive cases have been confirmed in the Bering Strait region, with the most recent being discovered on May 21st and 22nd through routine employee testing at the health corporation. The report listed all three as recovered with no active COVID-19 cases. 11 seafood workers in Whittier have tested positive for the coronavirus, according to city officials. The workers are employed at Whittier Seafood, a salmon processing plant that has been operating for 20 years. Jim Hunt is the Whittier city manager. He said the company immediately notified the city of the first positive test on June 1st. On June 3rd, 10 more positive tests came in.
They were immediately isolated. They had meals brought to them, and arrangements had been made to transfer them out up to Anchorage, where they'll be housed in separate rooms with 24-hour monitoring.
The company's coronavirus safety plan requires that workers undergo a 14-day quarantine when they first arrive for work. The plant states that workers should not have any contact with residents of Whittier and cannot leave the campus without permission of a supervisor. State reported 26 new coronavirus cases yesterday. Of those, 18 were reported in out-of-state residents, but all but one related to the seafood industry. That jump in non-resident cases nearly doubled the total number of out-of-state resident cases reported in Alaska during this pandemic. There were also 8 new cases, among Alaska residents. 4 were in Anchorage, 1 in Homer, 1 in Soldotna, 1 in Big Lake, and 1 in Anchor Point. University of Alaska Regents have put the brakes on a plan to merge the University of Alaska Southeast programs in Juneau, Ketchikan, and Sitka into either UA Anchorage or Fairbanks. The cost-saving proposal has drawn major criticism since being introduced by UA President Jim Johnson last week. UA spokesperson Robbie Graham said during a meeting yesterday, Regents voted to delay action in favor of a motion by Regent Dale Anderson of Juneau to instead conduct an in-depth analysis of merging UAS and UAF while, quote, maintaining the unique identity and environment of each institution, close quote.
It includes everything from looking at the true cost savings from merger to the regional impacts, how it might impact the economy of Southeast Alaska, certainly how it would impact the students and the programs. They'll be looking at the proposals that have come in from others. I think most notably the one that came in the other day from the Sea Alaska Heritage Corporation on Tribal College.
Graham said the review, which will take place over the next 4 to 6 months, will involve input from a wide range of on- and off-campus stakeholders. Regents also approved a budget for the upcoming new fiscal year, a spending plan which includes staff layoffs and executive furloughs, suspends pay increases, and eliminates 50 academic programs. Graham said the $832 million budget is $25 million less the current year. The same amount state funding is being reduced under a compact between Regents and the governor. The budget also includes $24 million in COVID-19 related costs, a hit, Graham said, is being covered with a draw from savings.
By policy, the Regents keep that account between 2 and 6% of the overall university budget.
Graham said Regents spent 2 hours Thursday morning in executive session to talk about the possible departure of the president, who is the sole finalist to become a president at the University of Wisconsin.
And when they came out, they talked a bit about how they would address the succession plan. And most notably, they'll come together twice in June on the 10th and on the 16th to talk about an interim if that step is needed.
Regents are meeting right now, and Graham said one of the agenda items is the 50 academic programs slated for elimination. She said Regents will be going over motions made by the Academic and Student Affairs Committee and could rescind some of the deletions. More on that as it continues. This week in water, beaches and climate change.
Could turning beaches green fight climate change? That story and more on H2O Radio's weekly news report. I'm Jamie Sudler.
I'm Franny Halperin, and it's This Week in Water.
Forests have been getting shorter and younger over the past 50 years, and that could have broad impacts on global ecosystems.
A new study from the Pacific Northwest National Laboratory shows that through clear-cutting, rising global temperatures, and more frequent wildfires, droughts, and wind damage, older and taller trees are being decimated, and the decline is likely to continue.
Younger trees that would take their place aren't growing taller due to rising temperatures that limit photosynthesis, and increased droughts are making the plants more vulnerable to attacks by insects or pathogens.
The conditions create a vicious feedback loop because when old trees are harvested or die, they release carbon into the atmosphere. The new smaller ones have less capacity to remove CO2, leading to more warming.
Also, young trees are less hospitable for many species of animals, insects, and plants that rely on them for shelter.
One scientist not a part of the study, told The Guardian that forests we already have need to be allowed to grow to maturity because they hold huge potential to capture carbon. Another expert said that the best way to protect the world's forests is to stabilize the climate by quickly driving fossil fuel emissions to zero.
A nonprofit wants to turn the tide on climate change by turning beaches green.
A group called Project Vesta plans to spread ground-up olivine over the sands of a Caribbean beach. Olivine is a green volcanic mineral.
When rain falls on the olivine, it dissolves, triggering a chemical reaction that pulls carbon dioxide out of the atmosphere and into the water as a molecule called bicarbonate. According to Fast Company, the idea is to speed up a natural process that normally takes place very slowly over geologic time.
Tom Green with Project Vesta says by grinding up olivine and then spreading it on beaches where waves can break it down, they're basically helping to accelerate nature.
In the water, marine organisms use bicarbonate to build shells, and it will eventually end up as limestone on the ocean floor. The hope is that the process will also fight ocean acidification.
Past studies have theorized that the process works, but up until now, no one has actually applied it on beaches.
But as Reuters reports, some see the project as a publicity stunt, which distracts from efforts to cut carbon emissions. Carol Muffett of the Center for International Environmental Law warned that projects like this one would require mining on a scale rivaling the coal industry in order to have a global impact.
Climate change could drastically reduce the amount of snow that falls on the central and eastern portions of North America by the end of the century if greenhouse gas emissions are not reduced.
A study from the University of Northern Illinois predicts nearly 30% fewer snowstorms per year and an even greater loss in their average size.
The lead author of the research said that the snow season will start later and end earlier, and what's considered to be a mild winter now will be among the harshest as 2100 approaches. He added that there will be almost no snowstorms in the southern tier of the U.S.
While less snow could save money on snow removal, it could impact water resources, agriculture, hydropower, and wildlife.
And it could create a dangerous feedback loop where less reflection of solar radiation off snow leads to more warming.
On the topic of feedback loops, recent research has shown that global warming is having the effect of making cyclones and hurricanes stronger.
Scientists have long predicted that climate change would increase the intensity of storms, but as Science News reports, a new study shows that cyclones may be boosting the amount of heat that ocean currents carry, and that could warm the planet further.
Cyclones are speeding up the Kuroshio current in the Pacific Ocean that's similar to the Gulf Stream in the Atlantic. It's a surface current that moves huge volumes of warm water from low latitudes to high ones.
That warmer water could then drive stronger cyclones, which in turn could speed up the Kuroshio current in a vicious cycle.
The researchers say the same effect could be happening in the Gulf Stream, but they're less clear about the role climate change is playing in the intensification of hurricanes in the North Atlantic.
And finally, with COVID-19 restrictions being lifted around the country, many are headed to the great outdoors for some fresh air and to enjoy nature.
And while most who venture out will social distance and wear masks, they might be unaware of a threat lurking nearby. Ticks.
Ticks don't social distance. To the contrary, they're looking to bite you and suck your blood. And they transmit disease, like Lyme disease, which, if untreated, can lead to serious health issues.
Luckily, Lyme disease is treatable with antibiotics, but according to Jory Brinkerhoff at the University of Richmond, the emerging problem now is that Lyme disease shares a number of symptoms with COVID-19, like fever, achiness, and chills.
And as he writes in the news site The Conversation, that might make some people skip treatment, thinking they have coronavirus, which could lead to dangerous consequences.
Although ticks that carry Lyme disease are mostly in the Northeast and upper Midwest, the insects live throughout North America and can spread a wide range of diseases, many of which also present flu-like symptoms.
For example, Rocky Mountain spotted fever, which can be fatal, is typically associated with a rash, but the rash might not show up until after fever and other flu-like symptoms, so a person someone might think they have COVID-19.
Spotted fevers can also be treated with antibiotics, so quick diagnosis is critical.
As with COVID-19, preventative steps are important. To avoid a tick bite, wear long pants and long sleeves and use repellent.
And thoroughly check your skin and hair for the bugs when you get home.
That's it for This Week in Water. We'll see you next time.
Tick country. Boy, I'm glad I do not live in a place where they are prolific. Juneau is about to become the first city in Alaska to get a permanent electric bus in its fleet. The city and borough of Juneau received a $5 million federal grant to purchase electric buses and charging stations. The first is expected to quietly hit the streets sometime in October. Spokesperson for Juneau Capital Transit said most of its buses will remain diesel-powered for now, but its plans to replace seven of its aging vehicles with electric buses run to 2022. Additional funding for the project comes from Alaska's share of a multi-billion dollar legal settlement with Volkswagen. The car company was sued in 2016 after it illegally sold cars that masked pollution levels during emission tests. In recent years, Juneau has become an enthusiastic adopter of electric vehicles. It's been compared to places like Portland when it comes to plug-ins per capita. Municipality of Anchorage leased an electric bus for a four-month trial period in 2018. Fish Radio for today.
This is Alaska Fish Radio. I'm Lainey Welch. The marine economy outpaces the national GDP. More after this.
An AMC-trained fisherman is more likely to survive an emergency at sea. Learn more at AMC.org.
A first-ever analysis has measured the economic force of our nation's marine economy, including contributions from commercial fishing, shipbuilding, seaports, beachfront hotels, and other activities dependent on the oceans. A team from NOAA, the Department of Commerce, and the Bureau of Economic Analysis looked at 10 business sectors that work on the nation's oceans, coasts, and Great Lakes between the years 2014 and 2018. Their report shows that the marine-related gross domestic product grew 5.8% from 2017 to 2018 and outpaced growth of the overall national economy over the 5 years of the study. The ocean economy contributed nearly $373 billion to the nation's GDP in 2018, and blue businesses supported 2.3 million jobs. In announcing the news this week, NOAA said the statistics clarify just how dependent America is on our waters, adding it's nearly impossible for most Americans to go a single day without eating, wearing, or using products that come from or through our coastal communities. Tourism and recreation, including sport fishing, topped the list of GDP contributors at $143 billion, followed distantly by national defense and offshore minerals. Commercial fishing and aquaculture ranked fifth at $13 billion to the GDP. Marine industries poised for growth include offshore wind energy, marine robotics, aquaculture, and ocean pharmaceuticals, NOAA said. Now, for the first time, the U.S. has ocean data that can be compared with statistics on other U.S. industries and with the ocean economies of other nations. Find links at AlaskaFishRadio.com. Fish Radio is also brought to you by Ocean Beauty Seafoods. In Kodiak, I'm Lainey Welch.
Fish Radio is supported in part by Joy Crafts, specializing in marine safety equipment. U.S. Coast Guard approved AMC instruction for commercial fishing vessel safety procedures and drills, serving Kodiak for over 25 years. 486-6293 at 445 Shahafka Circle.
This is the Island Messenger, a look at personal messages, the weather, and community announcements.
KMXT's Island Messenger, supported in part by the Kodiak Daily Mirror, your hometown newspaper since 1940. Now online at www.kodiakdailymirror.com.
Currently 53 degrees out at the airport, east wind of 7 miles an hour blowing, 10 miles visibility, partly sunny this afternoon with a high near 57, calm winds, partly cloudy tonight with a low around 46, calm winds become west 5 miles an hour after midnight, isolated showers after 4 p.m. tomorrow, but mostly sunny with a high near 56, calm winds, only a 10% chance of rain, cloudy Saturday night with a low around 46, not much wind. Sunday, mostly sunny with a high near 58 with west winds of 10 miles an hour. It's the 5th of June, 5:14, sun up, 11:04, sun down, 17 hours and 51 minutes of daylight time, 2 minutes and 11 seconds more than we had yesterday. Record of 70 was hit three times in the recent past, 1990, 1980, 1922. 34 was the low in 2002. The synopsis for the North Gulf Coast and Kodiak Island waters issued at 4 o'clock this morning, a 1,008 millibar low, North Pacific low, continues to move southeast into the Saturday afternoon. The remnants of its front dissipate over the North Gulf Coast today. A weak trough slides into the western Gulf by Saturday afternoon. West of the Barrens, including Kamischak Bay, west 27-foot seas this afternoon, west 15 5-foot seas tonight, west 15 4-foot seas tomorrow. Barren Islands east, west 15, 4-foot seas this afternoon. Southwest 15, 3-foot seas tonight. West 15, 4-foot seas tomorrow. Marmon Island to Sitkanak, small craft advisory through tonight. Variable 10 this afternoon. North of Dangerous Cape with 5-foot seas. West 25, except variable 10, north of Dangerous Cape today. West 25, north of Dangerous Cape, variable 10, becoming west 15 after midnight, 5-foot seas tonight. West 25-foot seas tomorrow. Variable less than 10, 3-foot seas in Chiniac Bay this afternoon. Same tonight. Tomorrow, variable 10, less than 10 with 2-foot seas on Saturday. Sunday, west-southwest 10, 2-foot seas. Marmot Bay this afternoon, variable less than 10, 2-foot seas. Southwest 10, 2-foot seas tonight. Southwest 10 in the morning, becoming variable less than 10, 2-foot seas on Saturday. West 10, 2-foot seas on Sunday. Shelikov Strait this afternoon, southwest 26-foot seas, same tonight. Drops down to southwest 25-foot seas for tomorrow. Tides in the Kodiak District, we've got a high tide coming up at 3 o'clock, 7.4 feet. Evening low tide, 8:14, 1.67 feet. And the early morning high tides at 2:26 in the morning, 10.4 feet. The Uganic tide on the west side is at 3:17 this afternoon, 15.1. Low tide's at 9 o'clock tonight, 1.0. Again, if you have friends out in the villages and you have contact with them through the internet or somehow, let them know that we're working on it and we hope to have it fixed by tomorrow. We do have a weir count for you here, which is looking pretty promising. So for those of you who are fishing locally, had 73 sockeye go through the buskin at Litnick yesterday for a grand total of 1,033 fish there. And the buskin numbers are picking up quickly. 116 went through the weir yesterday for a grand total of 283 reds through the buskin. The Lions Club is having a fantastic flea market tomorrow at the fairgrounds pole barn. You can find everything from small kitchen treasures to survival suits and support a great local nonprofit at the same time. All funds raised go back into the community and projects and more. It runs from 10 o'clock until 2 o'clock tomorrow afternoon. Bayside Volunteer Fire Department is about to begin their Summer Fire Recruiting Academy. It's a 40-hour course teaching the fundamentals of firefighting. More information, find them on Facebook at facebook.com/BaysideVFD. Again, meeting is on Monday night at 7 o'clock at the Bayside Fire Station near Fort Abercrombie State Park. Pam and Byways.
Island Byways is supported by Orion's Mountain Sports, specializing in high-quality clothing and equipment for hiking, climbing, and kayaking. Orion's Mountain Sports, located at 1247 Mill Bay Road. Hello, Kodiak, and welcome to the June 5th edition of Island Byways. I'm Pam Foreman. Boy, when Kodiak goes green, she goes green with a vengeance. The Green did an amazing climb up the mountainsides over the past week. Most of the trees, bushes, alders, etc. are in full leaf stage and are gorgeous. Even the forest floor has come alive with ferns, fresh mosses, lichens, mushrooms, and more. Head on out this weekend for some hiking, flower admiration, and fun. When you're out on the trails or camping this weekend, or any time for that matter, remember to leave no trace when you leave the trail or campsite. That means whatever you bring in, you take back out with you, leaving the wilderness wild for the next hiker. KMXT's virtual bear crawl is happening from now until June 15th. Here's how it works. Register online at kmxt.org, and then you'll receive a packet that gives you a list of challenges you need to complete during your 1.5-mile run. You choose when you want to run, where you want to run. On race day, you clock your time, take a few selfies, and send your time back to the station. You can complete the challenge anytime before midnight on June 15th. A great way to get the family out and active and have a little fun while getting muddy. What? You thought there'd be a bear crawl without mud? Don't think so. Call 486-3181 if you have any questions. Saturday, the Lions Club is having a fantastic flea market out at the fairground. The outdoor event will help raise some funds for the Lions Club, funds that are used for local projects here in the community. Check it out to see what treasures you might find. That's Saturday from 10 a.m. to 2 p.m. at the Kodiak Fairgrounds. And that's it for Island Byways this week. Have fun and stay safe out there. Thanks for listening.